Everybody's alive. My name is Paul Summers. I'm a solutions architect for Microsoft Consulting Services. And I'm here to talk about how you can make your search social using SharePoint 2013. Just a little bit of background on myself. I came over to Microsoft through the Fast acquisition, so the majority of my background is in search. But as we've become bigger parts of the Microsoft machine, I've started to branch my expertise out into a little more of the SharePoint capabilities, but search is still one of my core focuses. Just a level set for today, for this session, to make sure everybody's in the right room. The focus of what I'm going to talk about is how we can combine our social data to provide our users with more personalized and relevant experiences through search. I don't plan on going really deep into search or really deep into social, and I've given similar presentations over the past couple of years. I did it at SharePoint Conference last year, and it was much more mechanical and about the bits and the bytes, and I didn't really think that we were getting the message across kind of at a high level, so that's more what I'm focused on today. But I do hope that you'll walk away today with enough information so that you can start taking these strategies forward in your search implementations or SharePoint implementations in general. So the idea here for me, let me start my timer. Oops. The idea here is we're trying to address some of the classic search problems that we've been talking about as Fast people since I joined Fast or I started working on Fast projects in 2005. And the two core ones that we always focus on are zero-term search, which is the idea that if I go to a search-driven application, whether that be the homepage of my intranet or a search-driven app, anytime I'm using search for content delivery, that content is customized for me, and it kind of understands what I want out of my data right off the bat. I don't have to tell it anything. It just knows, right? Little telepathy, I guess. The other side is query disambiguation, which is the notion that if I enter in a search term that's a little bit ambiguous, I know what I want, but the search engine doesn't necessarily know what I want. The classic example, and I think it's the best example, but probably not the best one to use at a Microsoft conference, is Apple, right? If I search for Apple products, am I searching for a fruit or am I searching for a company? But it's really easy if I can understand who that user is to choose a direction there, right? I'm a technologist. If you look at my social feed inside our SharePoint tenant, you can see that I focus on search and I focus on all these technologies. So you don't have to worry about the fact that whether or not I like apples or not. I'm trying to find out more about Apple the company or Apple's products, that sort of thing. So that's what we're trying to address. These are the problems we're trying to solve. And when you kind of pull back a little bit, it's about personalizing the experience for your users and making the results that they get from search, whether it's a keyword search or a content delivery tool through any sort of application, making sure they're relevant to the person, and that relevancy can change based on who that person is. So out of the box, SharePoint offers a number of synergies between search and social already. I think people search in and of itself is social. It's a social capability, the ability to find people within our enterprise. And if we look at, we're very fortunate at Microsoft. Our SharePoint implementations have all the bells and whistles. And so if I find somebody on PeopleSearch, I get the hover card, and then I get instant options to email them or send a link message to them or call them over link. It's just so seamless, and that's very much a social interaction. And with SharePoint 2013, not only can we find people based on stuff that they've explicitly identified in their user profile, but we can identify experts based on content they've authored that's also been indexed in the search system. So we've taken a nice step forward with PeopleSearch, and it's very, very effective. The other one that's just out of the box, it's doing it for you, is the idea of popular content. With SharePoint 2013 Search, there's a new MapReduce-based analytics engine that's underneath the covers. It's powering a lot of our just general analytics. It's powering recommendations, which I'll talk about here in a second. It's for any of you with a if you've been using FAST technology for a long time, we had a recommendations product a long time ago that they're taking that same collaborative filtering algorithms, and now they're baked right into SharePoint 2013. We had an offering and services that could use FAST ESP to do this, but now it's just all part of the platform and you get it out of the box. What this analytics engine is doing, though, is it's processing user events. So as people interact with the platform, that data is being pumped back into the analytics engine. The analytics engine is making some sense of it and actually updating the indexed content to reflect those analytics. The one of those key pieces of analytics is just the popularity of that content. So you'll see if you install a SharePoint 2013 system and you index content, you'll see two managed properties in your search results out of the box, views lifetime and views recent. Views lifetime reflects all clicks on that content since the content's been in the system. And it's not just how we interact with it in search results. In 2010, we were able to get value from click rank, which was if I searched on a keyword and then I click on an item, that would eventually improve the relevance of that item based on that keyword alone. Well, in 2013, anytime I click on an item, it actually, whether I browse to it or I click on it through search results, it processes that as an event and it contributes to its popularity rating. Views recent is a consideration of the fact that just because something was popular yesterday doesn't mean I want it to be reflected as popular in 6 months. Content gets stale, you know? And so views recent, by default, it calculates the events on that content over the past 14 days. That 14-day limit is configurable, but it's only configurable on the farm level, and it's only configurable between 1 and 14 days. I don't know if there's any roadmap to make that more flexible, but that's the way it is now. The other one is item recommendations, as I hinted at a second ago. Item recommendations is based on a collaborative filtering algorithm, and it's very much, from my perspective, social. It reflects not how the content is related to one another, but how the people who have interacted with that content are related. So if I, as a content author, have been manipulating a piece of content and I keep viewing it, I become designated as an expert for that content. And then if one of my colleagues comes in and he looks at that piece of content, we can go out to the system and say, you know, hey, Search, what other items are like this item that my colleague might be interested in? And it goes out and it says, okay, what else? What are the other experts for this piece of content interested in? And so it surfaces those search results. It surfaces those results based on content that the experts are interested in. So it's very much connecting people through the content. And so I think it's very much a social capability. And again, driven through the analytics engine in 2013 Search. I'm not sure if I have what I've done for slides about recommendations, so I'll talk about it now. You can create custom events as well. So right now, all we process is like a view event. But for instance, in an e-commerce scenario, we might want to categorize those events and weight those events differently to define our expert graph. And we can create custom events. So an example would be an e-commerce scenario. To view an item isn't very telling of how important that item is. But if I add it to my shopping cart and then I purchase it, those extra events really indicate the value of that piece of content for me. And so we can create those custom events and configure the weighting and stuff. I think it's all done through PowerShell, but it's at our disposal. And each of those events actually creates a separate managed property in the indexed content. So just a quick refresher on the SharePoint Search architecture for any of you who haven't seen it. This slide is what we try to standardize our slides, so this should be a familiar slide if you went to any other search sessions. But the highlights here for the purposes of our conversation today are really that analytics engine underneath there. There are a couple of databases tied to it, but it is just it's part of the search component. It's CPU intensive because it's doing these MapReduce jobs, but and we can distribute it into a more robust architecture as needed. The other important piece, I think, for this conversation is the API layer. And I'm going to provide some more details later in the session. But with 2013, we've really exposed a rich set of APIs to accommodate all of our development needs, no matter what your device is or your platform. For a passionate search guy like me, it maintains the ability to use SharePoint Search as a search platform to enable our business for anything. So it's kind of a different conversation, but it's very powerful in that sense. So I do like to call out the API layers, and I'll talk a little bit more about them in a few minutes. Just to take a break, am I making sense? Is anybody like, what the hell is this guy talking about? No? Okay. Please feel free to ask questions throughout the session. If we need to redirect and focus on what people really have questions around, I'd be happy to do that. So continue to kind of drive a baseline of the conversation. There are a lot of capabilities, both social and search, that I think we need to understand before we can tie them together. And one of these fundamental pieces is the ranking mechanisms within SharePoint Search. The ranking mechanisms within SharePoint Search are much more aligned to what we used to have in Fast Search for SharePoint and ESP before that. And it primarily consists of a couple of three components. We have our static rank. Static rank is a static value we assigned to the data to say that the data is this important, the data is this fresh, but it's not dependent on the query, right? Our query time rank is something that says, okay, here's my query, and how is that related to my data? So term frequency, how often is that piece of content contained in my data? And term distance, if I enter in four terms, how close are they within the content when they match? So those are contributions to our overall rank score. Ranking and relevancy is very complicated. It's very much, and not so much a technical exercise, but really a business exercise with your users. Jan Inge Bergseth gave a presentation this week on it. So if you want a deep dive into ranking, I would suggest you go out and check that session out if you didn't already. The next component that we introduce, and this wasn't available in SharePoint Search, it was available in Fast Search for SharePoint, is what I'm calling the X factor. And I call it the X factor because it uses the X rank operator in the query language. The X rank operator allows us to take data at query time and boost content based on the matches of that component of our query. So if I search for a keyword and then I say X rank, and then I have another query expression, anything in that second query expression that matches will be boosted. Now, it's just a relevancy thing, so it's not a filter. And so it allows us to say, okay, I'm getting a full recall of my data set, but I'm going to boost certain content based on attributes that I'm sending in at query time. And it's a key core component to our ability to personalize search experiences for our users. In 2010, XRank was only available using FQL, but they've created a lot more parity between KQL and FQL with the 2013 release, so you can now use XRank with KQL. And I haven't done a one-to-one, but I think for the most part, there's full parity there. And I think KQL is the kind of direction we're going in. So if you start building your applications with KQL, it'll be more in line with future releases, as I understand it. So continuing this kind of approach to talk about social, and at least the social features that I think are pertinent to this conversation, these are the features that are pertinent, in my opinion. First of all, is user profiles. And so user profiles, fairly straightforward. What do we get in there? We get people's names, their departments, any data populated from our Active Directory profile, plus explicit things that we add to it, my interests, my expertise, that sort of thing. And that data is extremely valuable when we're doing personalization. The other one is people search. I talked about that earlier. We're not going to really go back to that too much more, but that is a very social element, and it's been improved with 2013. Then there's the notion of following. So with 2013, from a social perspective, we can follow sites, we can follow documents, and we can follow people and tags. And so that offers us a wealth of information about what people are interested in and how they're using the platform. Community sites, with a community site, we can establish a site about a topic, have a community members who interact with that content. But that gives us insight into, again, it gives us more insight into who our users are and what they're interested in. The news feed's really interesting from a personalization standpoint because it's much more real time, and it offers us, you know, if I'm typically interested in Apple as a technologist, but I start posting on my news feed asking people, you know, where the best place to pick apples is near Las Vegas, you might be able to leverage that information in real time to adjust my results a little bit on the fly. And I'm going to talk about how we can do that towards the end of the presentation. And then finally, recommendations. As I said, talked a little bit already about that. So I think that's very social. It's connecting people through content, or connecting people, content to people through people. At the end of the day, it's all about knowing our user. And so for the concept of search and personalizing and bringing people more relevant results, that's what we need to do. We need to understand who our user is. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, I'm presenting this, and I've been ruminating on how we can use social data for search for the better part of 3 years now, but I'm certainly not the only one. You know, Bing has very close integration with Facebook now. Google, you know, everybody says Google's investment in Google Plus was all about their ability to get all this personalization information from people, so they used so their Google search results were more relevant. We're on a different scale, I think, than Google, but, you know, similar ideas. And so here's all the information that I have at my disposal, right? I have my interests. This is just for my user profile. This is stuff that I'm explicitly telling the system about me. And it's very easy, and I'm going to show you in a couple minutes, it's so easy to leverage your profile information to personalize search results. No code. It's really cool. But this gives us so much information about these people and about what we're interested in. So out of the box, I almost find it strange that there isn't like some sort of checkbox that says, you know, personalize all search, because it seems so obvious to me that the system would take into account my interests that I've explicitly stated to make sure that my search results are always aligned with those interests. The other one is following people, and I guess it's potentially less obvious how this can help us improve search, but I think it's rich in information, and there's a number of different ways we can use this information. So if I'm following Chris, there's kind of an indication, I've told the system that I'm interested in what Chris is interested in, so I have his interest to lean on. In addition, if nothing else, I'm probably interested in content that he's working on, or I've identified him as a valuable author. I mean, we use metrics like authority in search ranking. It says this is an authoritative piece of content. Well, if the person who's authoring that content we consider to be authoritative, you know, a smart person, somebody I'm interested in, well, then we'd like to use that as input into our ranking. Then if Chris is also following somebody, this exposes us to, if not a relevancy thing, then a recommendations angle. So step out of the collaborative filtering recommendations, but just provide suggested content based on what the interests of people deeper within our social graph. So I don't want to talk about social graph analysis. I don't necessarily know the theories there, and I'm sure it could get very complicated. But the point is that there's so much data right within SharePoint that we have access to through these APIs that we can leverage to start customizing and personalizing these search experiences. The other one is, so then we talk about documents. Documents, to me, there are a couple of obvious hooks here, right? Like, if I'm following a document and it matches my search results, bam, that should be, you know, top 10, right? Again, we get into the concepts within those documents, you know. So if I'm following a piece of content and it's about a certain concept, can I leverage that data to further improve the rest of my search results? And then the authors. So I'm following a specific piece of content, and I think that kind of, by by relationship just says that I think that that author is pretty valuable, or else why am I, you know, if I don't think the author knows what they're talking about, why am I following that piece of content? Unless I want to just get them in trouble or something. So I think there's an implication there that I value the content authored by that, or value the that author. So again, we're seeing all this different data that we have access to based on our social interactions, and you know, they're such good input to our search results. Sites are similar. You know, sites are built around topics, typically teams. You know, there's content on these sites. So how can I leverage that to boost my content? So if a piece of content is on a site that I'm following and it matches my search results, to me it seems very logical that I would boost that up. So these are, there are a lot of different signals we can push into the search ranking, and so it's you know, it can get complicated. And so I don't want to suggest that just go throw all this information at your ranking results. All of a sudden, I think your head's going to explode because you're not really going to understand why content is appearing the way it is. But you know, if you introduce each of these elements little by little, we start to really build strong, relevant experiences for our users. And this is just a reiteration of what I was just talking about. But yeah, so the profile content to me is very intuitive. Content authored by people I'm following is fairly simple, at least from a code perspective. Now, that's something we can't do in without code. We have to leverage code to boost by content authored by people, and same with sites, content, and tags. But I think it's very, these are very straightforward applications of our social data to our search experience. And so how do we do this? So coming back to that XRank operator, that is the tie that binds this all together. That's the glue here. We can make complex query expressions that include the user's input, so their query terms, and then we just boost based on all this content, all this social data that we've been offered. And I say boost, we could filter, but I'm not a huge proponent. I mean, I think there are varying schools of thought. Do I get full recall, or do I limit recall for precision? I'm of the school of thought that let's tell them there's tons of stuff out there. Let's just make sure the right stuff is right in front of them. A lot of people disagree with me on that one, though. So, okay, so the first thing I want to show you is how we can leverage some of the social data without any code. I'm hoping some of you have been to some of the other search sessions and have seen the information about query rules. I think they're like the coolest thing that SharePoint 2010 introduces. And they essentially consist of a couple of components. They consist of a result source, and a result source is a logical segment of our data. So I can create a result source based on a query filter. So I could say all content, you know, that was authored by Paul Summers, Paul Summers content source, and I can create a content source. And it's just a logical configuration within SharePoint. The second component to a query rule is a trigger. And a trigger is a match-based thing that says, okay, if the query is this or the query matches this dictionary, and I'll show you that in a second, then I want to fire this query rule. So that's our trigger. And then the rest, the next part of it are result blocks and query transformations. So if a query rule triggers, I can add additional result blocks to my result set. From any source too, not just from the source I'm currently in, the context of my search. This enables really interesting federation scenarios. But I can also just transform the regular user query, and that's what I do. So let me switch over here. So I created just a basic site. This is my little demo machine, VM, and I'm going to go into site settings. And you can see, let's do that. You can see a couple things in here. You can see, for one, I have access to my query rules in two places from here, the site collection and the site itself. So I can actually create query rules at three levels, the farm level, site collection, and sites. I created a custom query rule on the site level. And that granularity of control for query rules is really great for people use sites who want local administrators to be able to affect the user experience in different ways. So here's what we do. Here's where we want to select a result source that is going to be the focus of our query rule. So, as I said, result source is the kind of the pivot that the query rules work off of. So it allows us to create contextual result sources. I mean, contextual query rules, even beyond just the site and site collection level stuff. So I'm going to go look at my local query rule, my local SharePoint results. So that's one of the default sources is local SharePoint results. That's stuff stored in SharePoint, so not external content or anything of that, or file shares or anything like that. That may also be in search. And so I've already actually created one, so I'm just going to show it to you. So here's the match options I have. So I have to create a name for it. I can match directly against the keyword. If it contains an action term, if it matches against a dictionary, that's how, actually, out of the box, for those of you that installed SharePoint 2013 already and have played with the search experience, if you search for a name, it fires a query rule because it matches against a dictionary built off of the user profiles. And it I can show it to you. It fires three different result blocks. Anyway, so we have this advanced query text match option. And for me, I did a regular expression that just gets everything. So any query that comes in, it's going to fire my query rule. Scroll down here. Come on, zoom it. And there are a couple of things I can do. So I can promote results based on this query rule. I can add a result block. Again, so that's going to take the query and go against potentially a different source. I can transform that query and go against the same or a different source. And it presents a separate set of results for me that's included in the same response. So I will get, for instance, that people search example I told you about, it will return three different result blocks all in the same response. So it allows us to, you know, so no more of this one web part over here and one over here, it's all contained in a single result set. For me, what I've done though, I'm transforming my query. And this is where it gets really cool with personalization and the user profile in SharePoint 2013. So what I've done is I've said, okay, I want to include my original search terms, and that's what the syntax is here to the left. And then I'm going to take the XRank operator, and I'm going to boost anything that matches the query expression after the XRank operator and boost it by 1,000 points. Now, the CB argument in there are a number of different ways you can apply boosting with XRank. I have to be honest, I haven't explored them too much. They're new to 2013. But they actually give you a lot more flexibility. You know, some of them are like relative boost and stuff like that. So this one is context boost. It's fairly straightforward. If it matches, boost. If it doesn't, don't boost. But what's really interesting is what is this segment here. This is out of the box. It's a syntax they're offering, so I can get access to any user profile property defined in the SharePoint system. And so I am taking user.spinterests, and it's going to dynamically create the rest of that expression for me at runtime. You can use multi-value ones. So this syntax is specifically, see the pipe, if you look at the pipe right here, that tells it that it's a multi-value option. It wants to iterate over it, and it creates an OR expression. I'll show you that in just a second. But I can put any user profile property name in here and use it. So I can put author or user, and I can create any sort of complex query expression here as well. If the managed metadata is populating the user profile property, the question is, does it use managed metadata? Yeah. So as long as it's populated in the user's profile, this is actually user interest here is I'm pretty sure is managed metadata. And if I leave it as just SP interests, it'll actually build out a list of GUIDs, and then the GUIDs get matched at runtime to create the terms that get shipped off to the search engine. For the purposes of demo, I included the name because it looks cooler over here. I'll show you. So I just do a search for SharePoint. The query builder is very handy as well, by the way. So you can see this is what it does. It pulled these three from my user profile and created an OR expression. The one limitation is you don't have control over how that expression, the rest of that expression is built, so it's, you can only use the OR operator. But you could make it more complex. I mean, I could say user interests for the iteration part, and you know, I could make it a little more query, and department colon user.department name or whatever that profile property is named. You can use custom profile properties as well. And so this is the query builder tool, which is very handy as well. So you can see what it does here. Anyway, I think this is one of the coolest pieces of 2013. And again, it's no code. It allows us to customize our search experience for our users right out of the box. And I can show you, cancel out. So my query rule is enabled right now. And I search for ADFS. And here are my results. And if I go back and I can deactivate the query rule, it takes a second or two for the search to. Don't make a liar out of me. Maybe I should come back. There it is. So you can see, so if I deactivate the query rule and I search for ADFS, I have my results on the left. With it active, I have my results on the right, which you can see are, you know, slightly boosted by the fact that I had SharePoint in my user profile, so it pushed up that SharePoint server plan platform document. I was expecting cheers, come on. So that's the out-of-the-box stuff, which having gotten the message, I think is very cool. But we really want to, I'm trying to emphasize that we can take this even further. We can take it further, and we can start playing with the variety of APIs that SharePoint offers. Anyway, the key APIs that I think are valuable to us here are the profile API and then the following APIs, which are both from the social, and then obviously we have to leverage the search APIs. We have a broad set of API options. We have our JavaScript APIs, we have our .NET client libraries, our REST APIs, you know. So you have a lot to choose from. It should be accommodating to just about any app or device or application you're trying to build for whatever you need it for. So 2013 offers tons of flexibility in that regard. So I want to show you just quickly what those what some of those APIs look like. This is the REST API. Oops, wrong device. This is the REST API. And these are the people that I'm following. And you can see that I can just make a call out to this REST API, parse this XML, and I have a list of the people I'm following, and I can use that as input to my query. I built a Windows 8 application that I'll actually be demoing tomorrow morning about building Windows 8 applications on search, and I started to incorporate this into it. I couldn't quite get my query syntax ready in time. But, you know, it's really quick code to go out and do this. And if you know, you know, if you're slick with linked XML and all that stuff, you can really do this. You can leverage this from any platform you want. And then, and here's an example of search results, too. So the REST API. The REST API is very exciting. It gives us so much flexibility to build more robust, you know, build more robust applications. Let me hop out and show you the that query rule for people search too. That's a pretty interesting one. So all I have to do is, if I enter my name in here, it's going to fire off a query rule that. So this fires the people search query rule, or the people query rule, whatever it's called. It comes pre-configured at the farm level. And you can see it basically does a people search up top. And then it transforms that query in a second result block for documents authored by Paul Summers. And then this is our natural set of organic results down here. So anyway, just another example of the query rules, which I find to be very interesting. So that's how we can leverage followed content for, so that's how one of the ways we can leverage the followed content. And then that's for following people. The REST API for following different types of things is fairly, at least with the REST API, it's fairly simple. I haven't played with the .NET libraries yet because Windows 8 doesn't support the .NET libraries, Windows 8 development, so I've been focusing on the REST APIs. But the REST API's calls are actually really, you know, really straightforward. We get to different types of content by just changing this type up here. So, you know, that's probably following. This is more people. Let me try a different machine. This is our online, this is our tenant. Sorry, just trying to capture this. So here is what the XML looks like for, I want to get to follow the sites. Yeah, so here's a document I'm following. And finally, let's see if 4 gets me sites I'm following. Yeah, and so here are all the sites that I'm following. So as I said, we have just a real easy way of getting to this data. Unfortunately, what we can't do is leverage that data in the same way directly in the query rules with that like user profile, user dot, that syntax I showed you with the query rules. I talked to the social team about it. They think it's a great idea, but we'll see if it gets built into the product. To me, it seems logical that that would actually be part of my user profile, but that's not available yet. So I mentioned to you guys when we started about using our social feed as well, the news feed in SharePoint. And this is something that I've been playing with for about 3 years. We did a prototype with a customer 3 years ago using the Twitter firehose as a way of determining concept trends that are going on right now and using that as an influencer in search results. And we spun that. In later iterations, we started to spin that as a way of personalizing content, because it's not about what's popular in the industry, but what are people talking about? How can I identify my real-time intent? Because even though, as I said, I'm a technologist and I'm typically interested in Apple products, today I might want to bake an apple pie. So I might be posting on our news feed, say, hey, anybody have a good apple pie recipe? And the system can start learning that I'm shifting context, even if it's just briefly. The way we've prototyped this is using Stream Insight, which is a complex event processing framework. It basically allows us to pump data into it and run queries against that data in limited time snapshots. So literally, I always think of it as I have a stream running down, I have fish going through my stream, and I'm throwing my fishing pole in to see what I can get, see what kind of fish I can get out of there. But once they're gone, they're gone. And it's the same way with this data. We define that window of time, but it's the same way with this real-time data. The Stream Insight is part of SQL Server, but but it's capable of processing hundreds of thousands of events per second. So it's very robust and powerful. And the idea is that as my newsfeed messages are coming through, I do some type of concept extraction against them, and I push them into Stream Insight as events inside Stream Insight. And I run aggregation queries against it. And I say, during this block of time, what were the top five interests that Paul had? And I populate some sort of cache based on that. And then I use that in the same way with the XRank operator as I would use following sites. And I say, you know, Paul searched for Apple, and I see that he's been talking a lot about recipes. And I'm going to take that, then I'm going to adjust my query to say, okay, XRank any content that has recipes in it. I mean, I'm sure we can get more complex there too, say, well, you know, what are recipes related to? It's related to cooking and blah, 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 blah. But fundamentally, we can just take those raw concepts themselves and push them, make them part of our query expression, and to pump real-time results or adjust our query in real-time based on our real-time intent. So this is a really cool mechanism for not just personalizing your data, again, but understanding the real-time user intent of your users. And because we have the flexibility of XRank and we have access to all this social data, we can do it right within the SharePoint ecosystem. We don't have to step out. Now, one question that people might want to ask is about Yammer. I haven't started playing with Yammer, but this is really just a design pattern. If you use another social tool, you should be able to implement something like this as well. It's just a matter of getting a handle on those messages and pushing them into the right kind of processing framework so you can query against that data and leverage that data to personalize your users' experiences. So I'm running pretty quick here, and I'm getting sort of towards the end. So the long and short of it, the summary here is that we're trying to personalize these user experiences based on the social data contained within SharePoint. And how do we do that? We do that by knowing our user. We know our user through their user profiles, through the following activities they're doing, through their newsfeed activities. They're telling us so much about them, and privacy questions aside, they're telling us so much about them, we want to take that data and use it for them. You know, we're using it to help them find the stuff they want easier and get their work done. One of our best mechanisms for getting that done is query rules. Out of the box, we have so much we have a lot at our fingertips. I mean, anybody here could just run home now and enable some of those query rules to provide provide a limited element of personalization right off the bat. And then the X factor, I like to say, with XRank and how we can leverage all this other data at query time to push to boost our search results and personalize those experiences. I see a question. The question is, how would I boost results based on the physical location?
Your subnet. We're on mobile right now, so think about social search and mobile. When I'm searching from my home, and I'm on a certain IP address, right, versus I'm in the office, I'm in Vegas, or I'm at another company, where how we can pull that information together to be able to get some interesting search.
Yeah, geolocation is very, very big topic as well. The key there is the mechanisms are very similar, right? We use XRank probably. The key there is, does our data have location-specific information in it? Or how do we want to pivot around that? Like, how would I want to look at my data differently because I'm in Vegas versus I'm at home versus I'm on a mobile device? I mean, presentation layers aside with the mobile versus home or, you know, PC, you know, how would I want to see that data differently, and does my data support that? Because if I can get a handle on my location and I can make that part of the query, XRank can handle the rest. But we need to tie that data together. I had a conversation with a customer a month ago, and they said, well, we really want to build a portal that personalizes the experience for our users. And so my first question was, okay, what does personalize mean, and what are the users we're talking about? Because a standard information worker, I think, you know, we've talked about how we can personalize that experience very clearly. But what about a call center employee? What about somebody who's shopping on my e-commerce website? I think the way that we personalize those experiences for those people are very different. And our data has to support it too. So we not only do we have to have the data about them, which we have for the information worker in SharePoint, we have a lot of that data, but as we step outside of SharePoint, we, you know, that data becomes a little more hazy and there are privacy questions and all that stuff. But does that answer your question? At least a little bit? And there isn't geolocation built into SharePoint 2013 search, as far as I know, but I think there are ways of affecting that for latitude and longitude-based queries. So. Yeah, that's a great scenario, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Question here? Sure. The question was, how do we implement some of that user intent stuff based on the newsfeed? I've done it. I've used Stream Insight. And what we did, I actually demoed it at, like I said, I've done this presentation a few times. And every time I get very mechanical and it just doesn't flow. But we demoed it at an internal conference a couple weeks ago or over the summer. And basically what we did was we read messages in intervals from the SharePoint REST API. So the SharePoint Social REST API also allows you to get to that newsfeed, that list of newsfeed messages. And I did some kind of rudimentary matching against the content in that, you know, basic like dictionary type matching. I think that's probably right now for me, as I think about that solution, that's the most complex piece, is how do I do really good concept extraction out of those messages, particularly since they're very small. Actually, I'll throw another detail onto that in a few minutes. But and then I transformed each of those messages into an event, which consisted of a user, a timestamp, because Stream Insight is very temporal in nature, and then the list of concepts associated with that event. Actually, I think I created an event per concept, and then I pushed them into Stream Insight, and Stream Insight requires you to create an input adapter, which is how is the data coming in. So it's just an interface you implement so that you kind of transform them into an event that Stream Insight can understand. Then an output adapter, so when your query finds data, where am I sending it to? And then you define these queries against the data. And mine were just like group by user and their concept. And I mean, I run the program, it starts consuming all the social data and starts pumping out the concepts that I'm interested in real time. And, you know, my original design was to push them to AppFabric cache and stuff like that to kind of cache them, and but I never really refined the solution enough at that point. I mean, but all those components scale as well. I mean, you know, the SharePoint APIs will scale, so you can put load against them. Stream Insight scales, you know, search scales, so it's a very scalable approach. I'm sure my code wasn't all that scalable, but architecturally it's scalable. And I'd be happy to give you more details at some other point. So. Let's see another question here. That's a good question. My thought would be yes, but and how would be PowerShell. I haven't seen any scripts created. I'm sure somebody talked about how to do it at this conference somewhere, but there is a script center on TechNet. I think you'll start seeing stuff like that, because that will be a big question. I mean, we don't want to, particularly for these things that really affect the user experience, we don't want to just test them in prod, right? And so we'd probably create a realistic staging environment, and we'd migrate them from there. So. I'm not sure. I don't know. Get that answered by somebody who's smarter than me. there have been a ton of search sessions. I think there was a search session purely dedicated to query rules. I think Pedro De Rosa gave it at another conference we did, and so he may have done it here, I'm not sure, but I would encourage you to go out and look at that video. I'm probably just scratching the surface of what can be done with them. And also, Steve Peschka wrote a blog from the, you know, he did in like the spring time frame when we were still in beta on using them. Basically using them very similar to how I showed you, using your user profile properties. So that's out there. Just search for query rules in Steve Peschka and you'll find that blog entry. So these are some slides that I was told to include. They're kind of advertising all the search stuff. Well, and there's exploring search query rules, hands-on lab. I think most of the good search sessions are actually behind us, unfortunately. So if you haven't gotten to them, you'll have to watch them on video. But also there's, you know, if you run into any of the Axie expert sessions and stuff like that, there are tons of us, a lot of us old fast people are hanging around still following search very closely. I would guess that customizing search experiences in SharePoint 2013 touches on query rules at least a little bit. And I think last but not least, give me a good rating. The question is, what are the key limitations for Office 365? And are you asking in the context of query rules or anything? I definitely couldn't give you an exhaustive list, but the one I know with search that's limiting is the content by search web part is not available online. I haven't heard specifically. I know people don't like that in general. So I'm sure the product group hears it. I don't even understand what the technical limitation is. It doesn't really register with me. I can't really wrap my mind that would be, but they did it for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's a capacity problem. You know, they don't want people throwing 15 content by search web parts on a single page, and all of a sudden the whole system goes down. But yeah, query rules are available. You know, like I said, they're controllable at the site and the site collection level. You know, you get access to user profile properties. The REST APIs are all exposed online, so there's no concern there. So in terms of the stuff I've covered, it should all be available to you. So the question is, and let me make sure I've got it right, is if I do a people search, it obviously returns people that match that, but does it also return people that match deeper into my, like, social graph kind of thing? I know, so you're talking about the kind of like the relevant, so I think the question is if I search for somebody for name, Gabriel, it'll return all the people in my group that match that name, and then it'll kind of expand out to people out deeper in the company, right? I'm pretty sure that they've included kind of your social graph as part of the relevancy in the default people search rank profile. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure I've heard that. Additionally, there's no reason you couldn't further personalize that people search to do kind of the stuff I'm saying. You could boost people automatically based on them being in your group. So you have those profile attributes in your user profile. So there's no reason I couldn't either through a query rule or through, you know, an explicit application code say, okay, searching for Gabriel and X rank department colon user dot department, right? So you'd have that effect. So again, very, very cool stuff for me. If there are any other questions, oh yeah.
Stream insights, like something you can do in the cloud as well.
I don't know. I just can't answer that question. I haven't dove deeper into Stream Insight with like the new SQL Server release. I was still prototyping on 2008 when I did it. So, and I also can't answer licensing questions about Stream Insight. I really don't know that. So. It's part of SQL Server. Yeah, it's a and I mean, obviously we're here for Microsoft, but the key is that you have some sort of complex event processing framework because you need to process. Well, I operate under the assumption that you're going to be processing a lot of messages because this isn't. When I've done my demos, I only have a couple of users I'm dealing with, but the idea is that I am processing the message for everybody across the enterprise, and I'm building up a cache of each person and their personal trending interests is really what's happening. And so we need to have something that can handle that volume and that scale. So smaller companies, maybe we don't need something so powerful, but as we start bigger companies using social more aggressively. And we can also, in a public scenario, as long as you have the right application keys and stuff, there's no reason you can't go to Facebook or go to Twitter and use that information as a way of personalizing, and then you issue your same X rank searches against SharePoint search. So a question back here. If you're building a search solution, is there a way in Visual Studio to package a rule to automate the deployment? The question is, if you're building a solution in Visual Studio, is there a way to package the rules as part of your solution? I don't know, but I don't think so. But I'm sure you can I'm pretty sure the APIs would support you programmatically creating query rules, so there's no reason you couldn't make it, part of the feature receiver or whatever it is. I'm not a deep SharePoint solution developer, so. But yeah, I think there would be a way, but it's not natively designed to do it necessarily. So another question down here. Yes.
1 to 14.
Yes.
Available on farm level, so I guess that means yep. It's not available in Office 365.
It's there, it's just you can't change it.
So it's 14.
Yes, yes. So the question was the views lifetime and the views recent for popularity content processed by the analytics engine, because that's a farm level setting, it still works in O365, but we can't change it. And I don't know why they set it there's a limitation of 1 to 14. That seems sort of arbitrary to me, but it's it's a cool feature. I mean, I think it's something people have been asking for a long time. I mean, it's so intuitive to capture that data, and so now we do it out of the box, which is nice. We started a blog. So the question is, if I've documented any of the details about this publicly. We started a blog not too long ago that it's on TechNet, it's Search Guys, and I keep meaning to put this stuff out there, I just haven't. Paul.Summers at Microsoft.com, feel free to ping me if, just yell at me to put it out there, or if you have specific questions or want, some code snippets or something, I'd be happy to help. And tomorrow, if you're interested in using some of this, some of these APIs and how we do it in code, tomorrow morning, doing a Windows 8 and search, Windows 8, search-driven applications with Windows 8, where we talk about how we use the REST API and how we trigger some of the query rules to build search-driven applications with Windows 8. Another question in the back? First question I would say is, how are you qualifying the relevance? So, so I'll table that comment for a second. The So the question is there a way to fire a query rule based on the rank score of the original results? I don't believe so. And primarily because it's a pre-search check. So it's checking for the triggers when the query is submitted, not as part of the response flow. The other thing I would say to that is, relevancy is really subjective, and we shy away from using the score itself as any sort of, valuable piece of data. It's good for debugging, understanding where all the rank contribution is coming from, and it's adding up to this number. But otherwise, a query is just relative to itself. The results in a query are relative to one another. And, I could issue a query one time and it returns a rank scores in the thousands. Another one could return them in the hundreds. So I'm not sure how we could even do that effectively, given the way the rank scores tend to come back. Another question down here?
I use the rank profiles pretty extensively in FASP 2010. Are they gone?
No, they're still there.
I've been to like six different search sessions and nobody's talking about it.
Did you go to the relevancy session with Jan Inge Bergsa? Is it after this? Oh, great, yeah. Ask him. Ranking has, I looked briefly at, in 2010, we have the rank log where you can really see that. Jan Inge showed me the rank log in 2013, and it is scary. So I'm hoping he can shed some light on it for you. Well, thank you, everybody. I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.